Hey folks, I'm David Goldstein.
And I'm Brian Brinkman.
You're listening to episode 9 of the Beyond the Pond podcast. Generally speaking, this is the podcast which we utilize the music of Phish to introduce the listener to non-jam bands that we think that they might like. Basically because we love Phish, we are Phish fans, but too many of you listen to too much Phish. We generally think that's kind of too bad. However, this episode's going to be a bit different.
Yeah, this episode we are going to take a step back from exploring Phish jams and music that we think is somewhat connected to them. And we're just going to talk about our top albums of 2017 so far. We are at the just about past the halfway point of the year. And it's a great moment to take a step back, scan the landscape of some of the great records that we've listened to this year, some records that we think that you guys will all really like, and see how much we can prove ourselves wrong by year's end with where our lists end up.
So, some of the themes that we're going to explore to this episode, for the musical themes of the first half of 2017, including O.O.'s Indie Revival, a big year for dad rock, woke pop music, the sounds of the 90s in some cases are back, and the resistance settles in.
We're also going to take a look ahead at some of the upcoming releases that we are both equally excited for and equally not excited for. And then we're going to wrap things up with our 5 favorite records of the year. We'll go through each of our lists, play a snippet from each of the records, and we're looking forward to this a lot. It's going to be cool.
So, Brian, why don't you kick us off with some of the big records of 2017 that have come out thus far?
Absolutely. A lot of really good music thus far this year, and in planning for this episode, kind of went through my playlist and started just listening to a ton of records that I've been listening to. Kind of caught myself off guard with how good some of it's been. So just a few I've got off the top of my head here. Brian Eno's Reflection, Hooray for the Riff Raffs, The Navigator, Japandroid's Near to the Wild Side of Life, one of the best shows I saw of the year right after their tour started. Jay Soms' Everybody Works, and then Jesus and Mary Chain's Damage and Joy. What do you got, Dave?
Let's see. Some other ones we had listed were The Magnetic Fields, 50-song memoir, Moon Duo, Occult Architecture Part 1 and 2. I know I mentioned Part 2 in a previous episode as being some excellent shoegaze jams I've been enjoying very much. Knee-High Offers, it's a band that I know Brian had mentioned in an earlier episode. Run the Jewels, Run the Jewels 3, and Sampha Process.
Keeping it going, we've got Strand of Oaks, Hard Love, their follow-up to their fantastic 2014 record. Thundercat Drunk, which I believe I featured on the first episode that we did. Tim Cohen, Luckman. Tianerwin, Elwan, and the Afghan Whigs in Spades.
We'll say that Afghan Whigs record, that's their second album since they've gotten back together, and it's I much prefer it to the first one, Do the Beast. So in addition to that record, we've got Amy Mann, Mental Illness, Big Thief, Capacity, Charlie Bliss, Guppy, 90s power pop record that I love, Father John Misty, Pure Comedy, Feist, Pleasure.
And the list goes on with Fleet Foxes' Crack Up, came out early last month, really, really great record, huge grower. Future Islands, The Far Field, Guided by Voices, August by Cake. Jason Isbell and the 400 Unit, The Nashville Sound. I know Dave and I both saw him about a week apart from each other. Really, really great show. Excellent whipping post encore.
He brings 30-something fathers to tears. Yes, he does. Going forward, getting to the end here, we got Kevin Morby, City Music, Mac DeMarco, Goofy Gaptooth Buddy, This Old Dog, Mark McGuire, Ideas of Beginnings, which we mentioned in the last episode, The Mountain Goats, Goths, Alex G, Rocket.
And wrapping things up with Steve Earle and the Dukes, So You Really Want to Be an Outlaw, the new Vince Staples, Big Phish Theory, Wooden Wand, Clipper Ship, White Reaper, the world's best American band, one of the most apt album titles of the year. And finishing off with Woods' Love is Love, the most resistance record in 2017. Really good year thus far. Great output thus far from a lot of big bands, a lot of bands that are scratching and clawing their way to the top, especially within the indie rock world. But I know, David, you and I share this sentiment. Really, what's making 2017 an exciting music year is what's on the horizon, what's to come.
Yeah, 2017, especially when you're getting towards end of August, beginning of September, is going to be really big year for kind of like the class of 2005, 2006, 07. A lot of the mid-00s indie bands are they're coming to play. So some big records on the horizon. We've got The National, Sleep Well Beast, which I think both of us are going to enjoy quite a bit.
Yes, I can't wait.
What else? Grizzly Bear, Painted Ruins, that's going to be their new record coming out. Everything I've heard from that so far sounds fantastic.
Yeah, The War on Drugs, A Deeper Understanding. We've talked about this band perhaps more than any other band aside from Fish on this podcast.
Mm.
You all know well, if you're listeners, that is my favorite record of the decade thus far. Their 2014 LP, Lost in the Dream. Everything I've heard from this record, all the writing I've heard about it or read about it, just in terms of the process of recording it, I can't wait to hear this record.
Yeah, that's going to be heavily, heavily anticipated. The two songs he's put out are fantastic.
Yeah.
And let's see, going forward, we've got Rostam, formerly from Vampire Weekend, his solo record, Half Light, coming out. That's going to be very good. And actually, the Broken Social Scene, Hug of Thunder, comes out this Friday, I think.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I'm glad that they're still throwing together 20 different artists and making some massive, massive wall of sound music. Later in the year, we've got Mogwai with Every Country's Son, as well as Queens of the Stone Age with Villains. I'm excited for both of those.
Looks like there's going to be new records by Beck, Earl Sweatshirt, Liars, and the Rostam-less Vampire Weekend.
It'll be interesting to see how they pick up without him. His sounds had so much to do, especially with Modern Vampires of the City, one of my favorite records, my favorite record of 2013. It'll be interesting to see how they pick it up.
Yes, if there's anything I've learned, though, from reading, I just finished reading Meet Me in the Bathroom, the excellent synopsis of New York indie rock from 2001 to 2011 by the journalist Lizzie Goodman. Excellent book, I'd highly recommend. And if there's anything that the second half of the book tells you is don't count out Ezra Keening. He's a smart kid. He has an idea. He knew how to frame it. He knew exactly what he was doing, although definitely Rostam was instrumental to their sound. So long as Ezra's the front man, I see very good things in the future for that band.
Definitely have a lot of optimism about that. That said, in terms of optimism about Vampire Weekend, there are two records that are huge records coming out in 2017 that I don't think you or I have a ton of optimism about. I would throw out Arcade Fire, Everything Now is that first one, and what's our second one?
LCD Sound System, American Dream. I've actually got higher hopes for the LCD record than the Arcade Fire record. I mean, I've had some issues with James Murphy in the past, kind of, you know, sort of the way that he's done business with regard to the huge, huge blowout final show and the documentary and him crying in the camera and then 5 years later being like, oops, sorry, didn't mean it that way. And then playing festival after festival after festival. But all told, the two LCD Sound System songs he's put out, if you think you might be into that kind of thing, aren't that bad.
Yeah, you know, I should say Call the Police has grown on me quite a bit over the last couple of months. And
is that the one that sounds like U2?
Yeah, and it kind of sounds like a lighter version of All My Friends. It just has that like 7-minute build. The one thing I'm banking on with that record is, and I may be in the big minority here, but I did not like This Is Happening when it first came out. And about a year later, I put it on and said, what the hell is wrong with you? This record is fantastic. And there's some really great parts to that record that I still listen to. And songs like Home, songs like All I Want, which we featured in episode one, it's grown on me quite a bit.
I'd say I'm going to say that that record's half good. I'll definitely ride for Home. All I Want, I Can Change. Certainly Dance Yourself Clean.
Yeah.
But everything other than those songs I mentioned, I can't get behind, like Drunk Girls.
Can't do Drunk Girls at all. But that all said, I have very little optimism about this new Arcade Fire record. And I don't want to spend too much time belaboring a record that I just think I'm going to hate before it comes out. But I just really, I don't know what happened to this band that I loved so much.
They're pretty far gone is what happened to that band.
It's what it seems like. I mean, the band that wrote 7 years ago, put out one of my favorite records of 2010, The Suburbs, band that came out with this just blazing debut and Funeral that just sounded like a fully formed band. I mean, maybe that's part of the problem, is that they just had it all in their first couple of records, and what are they supposed to do then other than become a glam rock band? I don't know.
I think part of the problem is they really started to buy into their own hype. And kind of felt like every record had to be bigger and badder-ass than the one before it. And the few ones I've heard off of this album just don't give me much hope.
Do we get their Nebraska next? Is that what we're in line for?
Oh, I think their Nebraska should have been this album. And everything has indicated that it definitely will not be.
Yeah, everything will be sparkly suits and desert scenes and ABBA influences, I guess. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Anyway, why don't we talk about some stuff we do like?
There we go. Lots of good stuff this year.
It's getting dark.
Very dark, very ominous. Let's move into a conversation about our top five albums of 2017 so far. I got loyalty, got royalty inside my DNA. Cocaine quarter piece, got war and peace inside my DNA. I got power, poison, pain, and joy inside my DNA. I got hustle, though, ambition, flow inside my DNA. All right, so our top five albums of 2017 so far. We've got a great list of really diverse records here that we're going to feature for you guys. David, what is your number five album of 2017 thus far?
Okay, Brian, for my number five, I have a record that I did mention on an earlier episode. My number five is White Out Conditions by the New Pornographers. Now, the New Pornographers, this is their seventh record. They are an exceedingly reliable go-to for very catchy power pop. They are led by Carl Alan Newman, or Alan Carl Newman. I guess it's AC Newman. At any rate, he's the front man. They also have Nico Case. She's kind of the co-front person. She has her own fantastic all-country career. Carl Newman's niece, Captain Calder, also chips in with vocals and keyboards. And sort of everyone else in the band is kind of like a who's who of like Canadian indie stars from the late 90s and early 2000s. Now, what's interesting about the New Pornographers is that at this point, they kind of had the challenge of being lumped in as a legacy band, which is to say they've got seven albums, none of which are bad. They're extremely consistent. And at this stage in the game, music critics kind of just take them for granted. But in a sense that they've already won, in that I know Carl Newman doesn't have a day job. This is what he does. They can consistently sell out 1,700 capacity venues. They have an adoring cult of fans. I mean, who really cares if Pitchfork will just like reflectively give them like a 7 or a 7.2, and that's that. I mean, other bands that kind of get lumped in with this are Spoon, who kind of faced the same thing with their very good album Hot Thoughts earlier this year, Bell and Sebastian, Built to Spill, even kind of like Wilco. I mean, all these bands, you know what you're going to get at this point, even if they're not that new. They're all excellent. And this album, I guess compared to other New Pornographers records, There's still the best game in town for catchy power pop, but like the one before it, 2014's Bro Bruisers, this one has a lot of buzzy synthesizers. The two records before that, Challengers and Together, they kind of had a thing with like live string arrangements filling in for the keyboards. This is very keyboards heavy, and if there's a theme, could be a bit of a stretch, but it almost seems like Trump era anxiety. I know Carl Newman is very active on Twitter. He does not like the president. He's got a wife. He's got a young daughter. And some of these songs kind of seem to address this, I wouldn't say head on, but somewhat obliquely. But, you know, I mean, they still remain one of the best games in town for very catchy power pop. And I'm going to play a song for you right now. You can imagine all the factions. High Ticket Attractions by the New Pornographers off the album Whiteout Conditions. And I'll just say that every New Pornographers song, the first time you hear it, you say, okay, that was cute. And then four listens later, that's all you can think about. And that song is no different. So, Brian, what do you got for your number five?
So my number five comes from the Phil Elverum project, Mount Eerie. A record called A Crow Looked at Me. Phil Elverum was of the Microphones, a band that I loved near and dear throughout the 2000s and early 2010s before he started working with Mount Eerie, before he started recording as Mount Eerie. The Microphones records just blew my head open in terms of what was possible with songwriting and with noise and melody. And I'll always love them for really expanding my kind of soundscape of what I thought was music and what I wanted to hear. This record is, and Elverum calls this barely music, not to be a downer. This record was recorded shortly after his wife, Genevieve, died following a year-long battle with pancreatic cancer. And she was diagnosed in the spring of 2015, which was just 15 months after their couple's first daughter was born. This record hit me incredibly hard this year. I've never heard an album that so paralleled the tragedies and fears that were going on in my own life like this one did. I do not particularly enjoy this record, but and I'll just, you know, be open. I've had a pretty intense year with health, with both my wife and close my mother-in-law as well. And to have a record that was so brutally honest in the unshakable dedication about the monotonous slog that is disease and death and ultimate recovery was so, so essential for me. I've probably listened to this record only three times, and I don't know how many other times I could listen to it. It is just too much, but it was really, really essential for me to hear the words that he was saying, to listen to the music that he was singing as I was going through a lot of stuff throughout the spring. It reminds me in a lot of cases of Sun Kil Moon's 2014 record, Benji. It just summarizes experienced tragedy in a way that a lot of people just aren't as capable of being that honest. But ultimately, and as I listened to this record again this last week and as we were getting ready for this, what makes this record so much for me is throughout the whole album, and it's a tough album to get through, especially if you're just like, it's a complete headphones listen, but it really brings you into what he's dealing with after the shock of his life just completely changing in front of his eyes. But there's a continual ability for him to see the beauty in the world, even after experiencing this kind of tragedy. It's really clear to me that Elvrum believes that no matter how awful and sad life can be, there's still blessings on a regular basis. Nothing's guaranteed, and every moment should be treasured. And for me, that was just so, so essential this year. So not to make this incredibly heavy, but it's a really, really important record to me. I think it's a really important record for people to hear. And we're going to play a song called Ravens off of that, just a quick clip off of it. So that was Ravens off of Mount Erie's A Crow Looked at Me. David, what do you have at number four?
I can assure you that this album at number four will be more upbeat than the Mount Erie album, for starters. My number four is Cloud Nothings. The album is called Life Without Sound. And Cloud Nothings are basically the continuing project of one Dylan Baldy, and what was once a bedroom thing has morphed into a full-on rock and roll quartet. Basically, his stock and trade is straight-ahead rock and roll with poppy flourishes, and he's kind of expanding on the sound he first mined on his breakthrough, which was 2012's Attack on Memory, which was produced by Steve Albini and sound a lot like the 80s Portland, Oregon post-punk band Wipers. Well, I'm sure we will discuss it further length at some point in this podcast, especially the Wipers album, Youth of America. I think the song was called Wasted Days. It was very, very similar to that. I know he followed up that album with the album Here and Nowhere Else in 2014, which contains the awesomely tight and thrashy song I'm Not Part of Me, which is probably still his best song. And one thing you notice about Cloud Nothings is that the drummer is totally amazing. You know, his first name is Jason, last name starts with a G. I can't really pronounce it, like Garrett's or something to that effect. But he's a fantastic timekeeper that keeps everything together. And the latest Cloud Nothings album, I know Dylan Baldy, I think he described it as a form of new age music, which is absolutely nothing to do with the mellow synth washes you would hear while you're getting a massage at a spa. In this case, I think he just means that the sound relative to the other record is slightly cleaned up, but he's still unquestionably fronting a rock band. The album has a crystal clear mix job. There's some piano here and there, but there isn't really anything approaching a bid for mainstream acceptance. And in fact, the last two songs of this album are some of the ugliest things he's put to wax. I know some friends of mine listen to this and they say, this record's a bit clean. And then they get to the last two songs and they say, oh yeah, all right, that's what I'm talking about. But the songs, in particular Modern Act and Sight Unseen, they do kind of sound like outtakes from R.E.M.'s Accelerate album. And it's not for nothing that it was produced by John Goodmanson, who's a Seattle-based producer who's think could best be described as rockin', but kind of clean. I know he produced some of the Def Cab for Cutie albums, most of the classic Sleater-Kinney albums, but he also has some more considerably aggro stuff like the Blood Brothers and early Bikini Kill. And generally, he does a good job here of emphasizing instrument separation. The vocals are mixed very well. It's a very good sounding record. But the fact is, they get by because Dylan Baldy's just an excellent songwriter who he really knows his way around verses and choruses. And when he hits completely, like on Enter Entirely, he finds the sweet spot between tension-fueled rock that makes you want to trash a hotel room, but it's also loaded with enough hooks for repeated listens. So the song I'm going to play here is Enter Entirely. I think that was the single, and it's probably in my top five songs for 2017. So I'm going to play that right now. Alright, so that was Enter Entirely by Cloud Nothings off of the Life Without Sound album. So, Brian, what do you got for your number four?
Number four record, I don't know if this had a ton of hype because I think it was announced about 10 days before it came out. Kendrick Lamar's follow-up to 2015's just masterpiece To Pimp a Butterfly. This is Damn. Kendrick here turns his focus inwards towards his impurities and his fatal flaws. Very, very different record from To Pimp a Butterfly. That was a global album focused on the 10,000-foot view problems in society and the world, especially a keen eye on those affecting and affected by the black community that he was raised in and in many ways represents. Damn is just as impassioned and as critical of a record. But here the centerpiece is Kendrick, and it's a very personal album. It feels much smaller, but it feels just as raw in a completely different way. This is his fourth full-length LP, and his first, again, since 2015's messy masterpiece, To Pimp a Butterfly. Really feels thematically and musically like a reaction to Pimp a Butterfly. It's overly simple, focused really in a lot of senses on his rapping alone, whereas that had horn sections and had loads and loads of little vignettes that kind of carried songs to each other. This, every song was written out in capitals. Every song is basically one word. There's very few guests on here. It's highlighted by Rihanna and U2 of all bands making a guest appearance. But from everything I've read, from everything I've heard from the record, it feels very much like a mid-90s hip-hop album. oddly enough, the working title of this record was What Happens on Earth Stays on Earth, but Kendrick kept feeling like it never read right. He kept coming back to themes of each song saying to him, damned if you do, damned if you don't, and came across the title that way. And I think the title is incredibly fitting to what the record is. Songs like DNA, Element, Humble, Lust, Triple X, and especially the album closer, Duckworth, all stand out as some of the strongest tracks I've heard of the year. We're going to play a track from it. We're going to play Humble right now, one of the best songs of 2017, one of the most ferocious choruses of the year, and this is an absolute must hear, I would say, for anybody listening to this podcast. So here's Humble off of Kendrick Lamar's Damn.
My left stroke just went viral.
Right stroke put a baby in a spiral. Soprano C, we like to keep it on the high note. It's levels to it, you and I know. Bitch, be humble.
Hold up, bitch,
sit down.
Hold up,
be humble.
Hold up, bitch,
sit down.
Sit down,
be humble.
Hold up,
bitch, sit down.
Little bitch,
be humble.
Hold up, bitch,
sit down.
Hold up,
be humble.
Hold up,
sit down.
Hold up,
be humble.
Hold up.
Sit down,
be
humble,
bitch,
sit down,
little
bitch, be humble, sit down. Who that nigga thinking that he frontin' on women? Get the fuck off my stage, I'm the semen. Get the fuck off my dick, that ain't right. I make a play, fucking up your whole life. I'm so fucking sick and tired of the Photoshop. Show me something natural like Afro. Show me something natural like ass with some stretch marks. Still a take you down right on your mama couch in polo sack. Hey, this shit way too crazy. Hey, you do not amaze me. Hey, I blew cool from AC. Hey, Obama just paged me.
All right, that was Humble off Kendrick Lamar's Damn. Moving right along here, David, what do you got as your number three album of 2017?
Well, just before getting into the number three album, I want to say I very much echo your feelings on Damn. That is a album's easily in my top 10. And I really like To Pimp a Butterfly a whole lot. But outside of perhaps King Kunta, it might be... It's very cerebral, but kind of low on what you consider to be trunk rattlers. Whereas Damn has plenty of trunk rattlers. I mean, seriously, DNA, Element, Humble... I mean, it's just great to hear Kendrick rap.
Yeah.
And while certainly you can really get into the songs and get into the lyrics, it's very much a show of skill, more so than anything else. And I have this fantasy that if the Mets were any good this year, Yoenis Cespedes would hit a home run, and then he would round the bases, and they'd play Humble over the loudspeakers, and people would go crazy. But clearly that's not going to happen in 2017 if you follow the Mets season like I have been. But anyway, my number three album is from a band called Dude York, and the album is called Sincerely. Now, Dude York is a trio of youngins from Seattle, Washington, consisting of Peter Richards on guitar and lead vocals, Claire England on bass guitar and also lead vocals, and Andrew Hall on drums. I would describe them as a very satisfying power pop band, almost like arena power pop. I mean, they're equally indebted to like the 90s fuzz pop bands, but they're also, there's definitely some Thin Lizzy in there, some like guitar heroics. Also, the singer Peter Richards clearly has a bit of a Richard Hell fixation, as goes his lead vocals, which kind of be the like throaty, like Yelpy type. And a lot of these songs deal with very relatable subject matter, such as mental health, relationships, and mental health. Again, it's a theme that always pops up. These guys are about the hooks. I mean, really what got me into this record was the fact that each album has this, each song has an instantly memorable chorus. The album was sequenced very well. There's lots of change-ups. And part of that change-up is while Pete Richards does most of the vocals on two songs, he hands off lead vocals to the bass player, Claire England, and she really steals the show with the song Tonight and the song Love Is, and both of which happen to be the singles, and it just brings back awesome memories of like bratty 90s female fronted bands like Hole, there's That Dog, certainly some Letters to Cleo. And I can't wait to see the band live because there's definitely a bit of an arena rock aesthetic going on. It almost, this record feels like a sister album to Charlie Bliss's Guppy, which is another album that I love. It's very indebted to 90s power pop. I know that the bands have shared a stage together. And just in full disclosure, I know the drummer Andrew Hall because we both wrote for the same website, Coat Machine Glow, in the late 2000s. But, you know, I told them if I didn't like your band, I would certainly let you know. But that's that's not the case here. They put out a really good record. And the song we're going to listen to here is Love Is, which I'm going to play right now. What you heard there was Love Is by Dude York off of the Sincerely album. Brian, what do you got for number three?
Number three I've got from an artist and an album that accompanied one of the best shows I've seen in 2017 thus far. It's Craig Finn's We All Want the Same Things. Craig Finn is the absolutely captivating lead singer from the Hold Steady. I saw him open up for the Japandroids at the 930 Club in D.C. here back in late February. Really, really great show. Life-affirming and just the kind of show that you just like sing your voice out and feel like $1 million walking out of. Finn writes like something of like a psychedelic Bruce Springsteen. Every song feels like it's a narration of someone's most dramatic turning point in their life, but then it just has all this imagery and all these just all this like poetic vision that I absolutely love and latch on to. This is filled, We All Want the Same Things, the record's filled with just some of the most endearing, colorful, and descriptive lyrics and stories that I've heard all decade. Jester and Jude, Preludes, 90 Blues, God in Chicago, It Hits When It Hits. I mean, these are clear singles, and they're clear signposts to a long and confusing year for everybody already. Really, really amazing stuff. Very passionate record. The record title is something of a twisted jab during the turbulent political times that we're in. Finn talked about this in a review or in a interview shortly after the album came out that, you know, while he believes there's a lot of divisions, there's a clear acknowledgement that at root we all want and need the same basic things. And, you know, this is a plea to the other side. We all do want the same things. Come on, let's be honest here. Finn calls these songs codependency jams. They feel like a friend in need, or that friend when you are in need, whose shoulder you provide or rely on. These songs just feel to me like walking into a bar, needing to sit down, have a couple beers, hash out life, and feeling all the better for it afterwards. David, I know that you are a pretty big Hold Steady fan. What were your thoughts about this record?
I enjoyed it, certainly the most out of his other solo records. I thought it was kind of the solo record where he really comes into his own, whereas the first two Craig Finn solo records kind of just sounded like unenthusiastic Hold Steady B-sides to me, whereas this one, he really ramps up the production values. And while certainly I don't think it's a substitute for the Hold Steady, it was the one that I could see myself going back to the most.
Yeah.
Although it's certainly not going to take the place of Separation Sunday or Boys and Girls in America anytime soon.
Yeah, this was just kind of a time and place record for me, and has always found its way into my rotation. So we're going to play the song Preludes off of Craig Finn's We All Want the Same Things. Alright, so that was Preludes off of Craig Finn's We All Want the Same Things. Shifting gears here for just a second. So at this point in every show, what we would typically do is talk about new records, but that's what we're doing in this episode. So we're going to do kind of an inverse structure here. We are actually going to talk about 2016 Phish shows that we recommend. We are cognizant of the fact that summer tour will be starting in about 3 days after this episode posts. I know I've been, with the warm weather, with the barbecue being lit up on a regular basis, I've been listening to a lot more Phish than I was in the winter and spring. I've been going back through 2016, listening to some jam highlights, listening to some sets and a few full shows that I feel like I overlooked to a certain degree. I feel like as a whole, 2016 was overlooked a little bit. Some rough patches here and there, but would you agree with that, Dave?
You say overlooked, I say justifiably looked.
I mean, yeah, there was some, the first 10 days of summer tour are pretty unforgivable in a lot of cases, but from...
it got better in their defense. It got better as they went on.
By year's end, I think that they were playing at about the same strength that they were playing at in summer 2015. I would say that the end of the fall tour and the MSG run are some of the strongest Phish we've heard recently.
Yeah, the end of the fall tour, especially the Las Vegas shows and the Nashville shows, are very strong. They make me kind of sad to think about because Obama was still our president at that point.
No. not even just still our president. We thought we were just basically getting Obama in a pantsuit. And
yeah,
my God, I will
that
say
didn't that happen.
The one thing that brings me, I always think back to the fall tour as the Cubs World Series march, and rather than enjoying it in the moment, I think this was the one fish tour I really didn't enjoy because I was just so stressed out about every single baseball game. Like, can you guys just finish something? Like, why is this? But now I listen back, and I enjoy it all. So I actually have a show picked from the fall tour. A lot of big highlights throughout the tour, but wanted to find something that I hadn't heard a lot of conversation about, and I hadn't really listened to a ton since it happened, but have really enjoyed in hindsight. And that's the second night of Charleston, South Carolina, 10/15/2016. This was the second night of the fall tour, and rightly so. I would say this was overshadowed by the greatness in Vegas, Atlanta, and Nashville, three really good runs that happened throughout the tour. But this has a really, really good first set. A lot of new tunes. I think I counted, it's like 8 or 9 new tunes throughout the show. And like the first 9 songs of the whole show has like 6 or 7 songs written after 2013. Lots of energy in kind of typical standards like Blaze On. When it's not in a Type 2 type of setting, it really, really rages as an opener. Devotion to a Dream has a fantastic solo from Trey. You know, Lengthwise into a Maze, a really rare first set Carini, as well as a great Wolfman's to close it out. And then the second set, you've got the Mercury in a Twist into I Always Wanted It This Way, the debut of I Always Wanted It This Way, which that jam segment really showcased the fluid and creative jamming that would really become the norm for Fall and MSG, and definitely for parts of Mexico as well. So if you haven't put on 10/15/2016 in a while, I would definitely recommend throwing that on. Really just surprising show, one of my favorites from last year.
Is that the first Mercury from 2016? I think it might be.
No, they did Mercury at Dick's, and that was the first.
Oh, that's right, 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 right.
They kind of tried to see what they could push beyond the edges of Mercury, but
right, people thought it was shelved, and it came back at Dick's. People thought, well, maybe it's only a Dick's thing, and they went and played it a bunch of times in the fall tour.
Yeah, and then you got it at Mexico, a really good version. I hope it's back. They did some really good work on that throughout the fall.
Yeah, fantastic song. Fantastic song. Should have been on Big Boat.
Yeah, it really should have been. Really should have been. What do you
I got? I have July 8th, 2016, from Mansfield, Massachusetts, better known as Great Woods. I think it's called the Xfinity Center. So, this show I was actually at, it has probably easily a top 3 first set of the 2016 Summer Tour. Fantastic improvisation out of Cities in particular is the one thing that comes to mind. Had a kind of a funky Party Time opener. The first Space Oddity, the first a cappella Space Oddity closer since they did it at Wrigley Field. But yeah, very, very good first set. I think at that point it was certainly the first set to beat. I'm thinking maybe the tour closer from Chula Vista might have a better first set off the top of my head. Or the next night, Hartford was also pretty good. But certainly the second set, with the Ghost and Light and Wolfman's, this was shaping up to be an all-timer until the PA went out. So it's a big what could have been, but the Ghost Light is, the Light could be a top 3 version of that song. The Ghost is 14 minutes of fire. That's, I think, the first and maybe only time they've done the Ghost Light combo, believe it or not. It seems like something that they would do much more, but it really wasn't. But that Light, it's got rock. It's got a crazy Manteca thingy going on. It has Trey forgetting a verse and kind of making fun of it. It's probably the best version of that song they played in 2016. And the Wolfman's was getting extremely funky with a great vocal jam until the PA went out and they kind of slowly sauntered off the stage like Ashley Simpson did that one time when she was caught lip-syncing on Saturday Night Live. And then the set from then on was not great because they kind of, there was like a chalk dust back on the train, saw it again, and we could hear it because we were in the pavilion. I'm told that if you were on the lawn, the PA never fully came back on. But seriously, go back and listen to the first set and listen to the Ghost Light about 5 or 6 times because you really ought to. And yeah, I know
that light was... I remember couch touring it, and that was the first moment in the summer tour where I just was like, what are they doing on stage? And that was a normal reaction throughout summer 2015, and it was very, very late in that summer for that to be happening, but it was great that they caught fire when they did.
I think I also had a Trillium Mosaic double dry hop pale ale or something or other in the parking lot that put me in a really good mood going into that show. Because nobody dry hops like Trillium dry hops.
Yeah, great beer, great setting, great show, until it wasn't.
Until it wasn't. But yeah, that kind of marked, there were a few boner shows from then on out. I know the Forum was particularly galling, but I think Grey Woods is kind of the demarcation that things were generally pretty good after that.
Yeah, they followed up a really weak show at Portland. You had... Great Woods is fantastic. You had a really great Hartford show with one of my favorite jams of the year in that Down with Disease. And then a great first set out at the...
Syracuse, right?
The landfill out in Syracuse.
Right. Oh, that's right. Don't wander off the lot, otherwise you'll die.
Right. But yeah, then you had a good Gorge show, and then a really bad Gorge show, a couple really good Bill Graham shows, a really weak Bill Graham second set. It was a very up and down tour until they started to kind of right the ship there. But yeah, Great Woods, definitely a big demarcation line. So there's our fish for the show. We're going to get back to our list. Done our top three or top five through three of the year thus far. We're going to transition here to our top two of 2017 so far. David, what do you got at number two?
My number two album of the year so far is Melodrama by Lord. Now, granted, this album has been written about quite a bit, and it's certainly a little... more mainstream than some of the stuff that we tend to cover on Beyond the Pond. But let me tell you, ignore Lord at your own peril. She really needs to be taken seriously. Like, the first record with Royals was good. It had a lot of promise. But the second album is... goddamn. It's, in addition to being extremely catchy, I mean, what's neat about her second album is how willfully weird a lot of it is. I mean, the case in point I keep coming back to, there's a song in the middle of the album called Hard Feelings / Loveless. And Hard Feelings, like, instead of a guitar solo, it sounds like what's like sad robots having sex. That's kind of the only way I can really describe it. And a lot of credit has to go to Jack Antonoff, who collaborated with Lord on the whole album and who finally Ready to Forgive for Fun.
Yes, and, yes, I agree. Totally agree.
I would say the song Green Light, which was the first single, it's a candidate for the best song of 2017. And it can be argued that that isn't even the album's best song. And she's having a lot of fun with the lyrics here. She's blowing shit up with homemade dynamite. She's hanging a relationship in the Louvre. She's sinisterly warning an ex about the dangers of kissing, quote, a writer in the dark. And she's getting wrecked at parties in search of perfect places while simultaneously acknowledging the fact that such perfect places are actually bullshit. And she's only 20 years old, which is crazy to me. I think her first album came out when she was 16. There was a lot of pressure to follow it up, and she followed it up in a major way. And that these songs have tons of different sounds, very interesting lyrics evoking someone much older than she actually is. You know, very profound. Not so much profound, but, you know, lots of the party and the after party and thinking, like, what does it mean? How are we going to feel when we're sober? It's just, I found it extremely enjoyable. It's probably, other than my number one, it's certainly the thing I've listened to the most in 2017 so far. And the song I'm going to play off it here is going to be Homemade Dynamite, the third song on the record.
A couple rebel top gun pilots flying with nowhere to be. Don't know you super well, but I think that you might be the same as me. Behave abnormally. Let's let things come out of the woodwork. I give you my best, I tell you all my best lies. Yeah, awesome, right? So let's let things come out of the woodwork. I give you my best, I tell you all my best lies. See me rolling, showing someone else love. Dancing with our shoes off, no, I think you're awesome, right? Drive, but he can hardly see. Ooh. We'll end up painted on the road, red and chrome, all the broken glass sparkling. I guess we're partying, so let's let things come out of the woodwork. I give you my best, I tell you.
All right, that was Lord. We just listened to Blow Shit Up with Homemade Dynamite off of her album Melodrama. Brian, what do you got for number two?
It's number two. I feel a bit bad about taking this one. I think that this might have been your number one, your number two. I think both in just agreement about this. This is one of the best records of the year, one of the most anticipated records of the year. This is Slow Dive with their self-titled record, first in 22 years, Slow Dive. It is an absolute gem. Might be the prettiest album of the year. Wall of sound guitars, tasteful effects, soaring vocals, the lyrics, fantastic throughout, but they matter less than the instrumentation they provide at times. It's just an absolutely gorgeous record. The song Slow Mo that opens it up might be my favorite opener of the entire year. It's so subtle and so quiet and pretty, but it ushers in their first record in over two decades in just a perfect, perfect way. And then you follow it up with Star Roving. It's just a complete statement of confidence that you know, really can only come out of a band that's wizened by time and filled with experience. You know, it's the basically the exact opposite of a killer debut. This is a group that has been marinating for years and comes out with a record like this. That's just, it's fantastic. Love this album. Slow Mo, as I mentioned, Star Roving, Sugar for the Pill, Thinking About Love, Go Get It. It's just a full album, a lot of creativity. Feels like a cloud sometimes when you're listening to it. His record is just really it's expertly crafted, and it's proof that bands who break up and then reunite should no longer be chastised unless they are found in tears at the end of their breakup documentary.
That's some shade right there.
But they shouldn't be chastised as simply a cash grab. You know, this group came back together after, I believe, 18, 19 years apart. You know, really, one of the cool things about doing this podcast is we've gotten ourselves to talk about so many different bands that are, you know, 5, 6, 10 records deep. And really, with the shifts in the music industry, there's such an emphasis now on continuity and on continuous live performances and touring. So more and more artists need to and should reunite after years apart. It's just a way of life. It's simple economics. As this album proves, when that's handled right, those years of experience, the time, the gray hairs, the back pains, the time spent changing diapers, can oftentimes lead to brilliance that wasn't even there in the halcyon youth. So I can't say enough about this record. It just completely took me the first time I heard Star Roving, the single that came out, I believe, January. And then the record as a whole, when it came out, was just a fantastic ushering in of spring. So we're going to play Slow Mo. I think it's the best opener of the year. It might be my favorite song of the year. I don't know. But otherwise, all I know, it's an absolutely gorgeous song. And hope you guys enjoy this. This is Slow Mo off of Slow Dive's Slow Dive. So that was Slow Mo off of Slow Dive's Slow Dive. Again, one of just the most beautiful songs of the year. We are down to our number one records of 2017 thus far. David, what do you got?
Well, first, I just want to reinforce what you were saying about that Slow Dive record. It is fantastic. It is the huge wash of sound. It is one of the more exciting things that happened to shoegaze music in quite a while. And just as a basis for comparison, another 90s shoegaze titan Ride, they also put out a recent reunion album called Weather Diaries, which, while fine, isn't that exciting to me, but certainly Slow Dive wins the battle of the 90s reunion shoegaze titans in that case. But my number one is an album, Brian, which you actually introduced me to earlier on in one of our earlier episodes. I started listening to it. This is Way Out West by Marty Stewart and his Fabulous Superlatives. We covered it in an early episode, and since Brian turned me on to it, I've basically been listening to it nonstop. This is a delicious-sounding record. Now, Marty Stewart, he's kind of started his career as a member of Johnny Cash's band. I think he's been solo since the mid-80s in some form or another. He's won a few Grammys. He's won a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Americana Music Awards in 2005. His name appears on at least 20 albums. Dude's been around, and yet this is honestly the first time I've really paid him much mind, and I feel like I've got some catching up to do. But with this album, It's got country ballads a la Marty Robbins' El Paso. There's some surf psych rock vignettes that are very Tarantino or like Breaking Bad sounding. Ringing bird sounding power pop, which makes sense because Mike Campbell from Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers is in the band, and he's the world's most unabashed Roger McGuinn biter. There's some spoken word stories, like Bakersfield country music. It's all wrapped up in one tribute to the wonders of the American West. And kind of like the feeling I keep getting from this album is one of effortless cool, like between the desert surf instrumentals, the title track where Marty Stewart's taking on the role of like a pill-popping circus clown, kind of. He's got this huge silver mullet. I mean, he's clearly living his best life, and it really comes through in the music. It's just it's a great road trip album, despite the fact that it's pretty short. I think it's really only about 40 minutes, but there's no filler. And if any of those things sound interesting to you, I would recommend listening to this album right away. It's fantastic summertime music. And the song that I'm going to play off of this album is Time Won't Wait. Here we go.
Big bright moon is shining down on the desert sand. I reached down, touched the earth, and held it in my hand. As the dirt fell through my fingers, the wind did seem to say, don't put off until tomorrow what you can't do today.
All right, that was the very jangly bird-sounding Time Don't Wait off of Way Out West from Marty Stewart and his fabulous superlatives. My number one album of 2017 so far. It would take something very big to knock it out of the top five, but who knows? The year is only halfway through. Brian, what do you got for the number one slot?
My number one record comes from a singer-songwriter that I've been told I have to listen to for years, and for whatever reason just did not connect with me until 2017 on as deep of a way as he did, Ryan Adams' Prisoner. I've listened to him throughout the years. Every time he puts out a record, I've always felt like a duty to listen to it, but it's never just completely taken me over like it did with this record. Finally clicked. I have not recently been divorced. I have not seen the end of a relationship in almost a decade. But as I noted with my number five record, Mount Eerie's A Crow Looked at Me, had a very intense first half of 2017, and this record just completely connected with me, connected the dots and so many of the feelings I had in a very simple, universal, reflective, and forward-thinking message about loss and recovery. This record is Adams' 16th in just over 16 years. It's just an absolutely unbelievable string of prolific songwriting, and it thematically is right in line with his 2014 self-titled LP that really focuses on heartland rock and 80s soundscape production. Think Tunnel of Love, Bruce Springsteen, Brothers in Arms from Dire Straits. A lot of records that we talked about in episode 5, our dad rock episode. Album has some great songs throughout. Do You Still Love Me, the opener, Prisoner, Doomsday are about as powerful opening trio and among my favorite songs of the year. Anything I Say to You Now is a just classic shut the door and just scream with your guitar and your amplifier breakup anthem. And Outbound Train is the closest that Adams seems to have come to the sound he's been mimicking since the early mid-2010s. And it sounds like it could fit right alongside other songs on the War on Drugs, Lost in the Dream.
Or Bruce Hornsby. Very Hornsby, that song.
Very Bruce Hornsby. Very.
And Hornsby in and of himself is very War on Drugs. So.
Yes. it all comes back to the War on Drugs, as you can see. As David was mentioning, as we were getting into my number one record here, there's so many big albums yet to come this year, so I'm not sure if this will be my favorite at the end of the year. From a personal standpoint, I really hope it isn't. But records like this show me why music is so necessary, no matter where life goes, whatever surprises come along. There are songs, there are albums, there are bands that are there to communicate heartache, pain, and the ultimate hope throughout life. For that, I am forever thankful that this record appeared in my life when it did. And we are going to play Outbound Train off this record. Turn it up. It is Ryan Adams at his absolute best. This is off of Prisoner.
How am I supposed to know when it's time to go?
Okay, that was Outbound Train by Ryan Adams off the Prisoner album, an album which I also think is fantastic. Listened to quite a bit in 2017. Just to recap, my top five, I had at number five, The New Pornographer's Whiteout Conditions. Number four, Cloud Nothing's Life Without Sound. Number three, Dude York, Sincerely. Number two, Lord's Melodrama. And number one was Way Out West by Marty Stewart and his Fabulous Superlatives.
And I had at number five, Mount Eerie, A Crow Looked at Me. Kendrick Lamar's Damn at number four. Number three was Craig Finn, We All Want the Same Things. Slow Dive came in at number two for me. And my number one, as we just heard, was Ryan Adams' Prisoner.
Now, if you have any opinions on our top fives or just want to talk about any of the music in 2017 or want to talk about Fish or tell us that we're complete know-nothings, you can do that because we're quite a bit out there on social media or out there on Twitter @_beyondthepond, one word, on Medium, medium.com/beyondthepond. And on Spotify, we've got the Beyond the Pond podcast song playlist. I think you can find it easily if you're a paying member. If not, it may be a little more difficult. We can easily post it if you add us. That can easily be done. And in that playlist, what we've done is every song that's available on Spotify that we've covered in depth, we put into the playlist. You press shuffle, you have a grand old time. So there will be 10 new songs appearing on that playlist before it goes, before we publish, which will be upcoming this Tuesday because we publish every other Tuesday.
Yeah, so we publish every other Tuesday, and as you guys could tell, we did something a little bit different with this episode than we had with our first eight. We are going to return to our norm a little bit here during summer tour. We want to celebrate Fish's summer tour. We want to focus on it in our own unique way. So what we're going to do over the next couple episodes is we're going to take a Fish jam from the current summer tour, and we're going to break it down in the same way that we have the first eight jams that we focused on. So at this point in time, we are recording this about 10 days before summer tour begins. This episode is going to go live about 3 or 4 days. We have no idea what we're doing for our next two episodes. It's a little bit terrifying. It's going to be a lot of quick work and a lot of quick communication, but I'm really excited for it. I think it's going to be a good way for us to talk about summer tour as it's happening while still focusing on new music that we want to share with you guys. And I think that you guys are all going to enjoy it. I'm excited for it.
It's going to be a little bit sloppy, a little bit fun, but I think we're up to the task.
Yeah, it'll kind of be like your first couple Fish shows of a tour, you know?
All right. If you got this far in this episode, we thank you very much for listening, and thanks for hanging with us for a somewhat different format. And on that note, I'd just like to say I'm David Goldstein.
And I'm Brian Brinkman.
And thank you very much for joining us. And come back in two Tuesdays, at which we will go beyond the pond. But I hear sounds in my mind. New sounds in my mind, but honey, I'll be seeing you ever I go. But honey, I'll be seeing you down every road. I'm waiting for it, that green light. Cause honey, I'll come get my things, but I can't let go. I'm waiting for it, that green light. Oh, I always try, could get my things. Sometimes I wake up in a different bedroom. I whisper things, the city sings them back to you.